So we are on the record in the matter of the application of Dameron Valley Water Works LLC for approval of a general rate increase and expansion of service area. This is docket number 15-2025-01. My name is Jenny Johnson. I am a new ALJ with the Public Service Commission, and I've been assigned to conduct this hearing. For the record, the application is for an increase in the service connection fee. The fee is currently $1,500, and the proposed increase is to $2,000. In addition, it's for an increase on the rates that apply to usage according to a tiered structure, and also taking into account some irrigation shares and some shareholder issues. The last general rate increase was in 2004, and in 2008, the company added a conservation rate, which was an opt-in rate. Have I got that pretty much accurate?
It was opt-in for those current customers, right, and mandatory for all future.
Right, thank you for that clarification. All right, let's put appearances on the record. For the applicant, Dameron Valley.
Yes.
Go ahead and state your name, please.
Brooks Pace.
Thank you. And your position with the company?
I'm the managing member of Dameron Valley Water Works LLC and the president of the Dameron Corporation, which only owns the LLC.
Okay, thank you. And for the division?
Patricia E. Schmidt with the Attorney General's Office on behalf of the Division of Public Utilities. And with me as the division's witnesses are Mr. William Duncan and Mr. Mark Long.
Thank you. And the intervener?
Barbara Yelly on my own behalf.
And Ms. Yelly, will you spell your last name for the court reporter? It is unusual.
H-J-E-L-L-E.
Did you get that?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. All right, Mr. Pace, we'll begin with you.
Would you like me to stand up?
Or? You're fine right there. If you would just pull your microphone towards you and make sure that it's on.
It is.
Pull the plant microphone.
You can't hear me still? Sorry. The case I need to make, we've made a proposal. You can't hear it?
There you go.
The proposal we've made in applying for this rate case was generally a 25% increase in the rates in all categories, with the exception of irrigation. It was about a 28% increase. And then we intended to leave the standby fee the same at $20. This is a 39-year-old rate structure that evolved with the community. A lot of this is going to be redundant. You can stop me if you read everything I've submitted and I start boring you and you say, well, I already know all that stuff, because I don't have much to add beyond what I have already submitted.
All right.
We stubbornly prefer the rate structure that we've had for all these years. It has evolved. We started developing very large lots, 5-acre lots. They got very large tappings, up to 1,600 gallons a month at the base rate. Then later, we went to smaller lots, 1-acre lots, and we went to 1.5, what we called 1.5 tapping, which was 1,200 gallons a day, or 36,000 gallons a month at the base rate. And then overage is applied. From day one, we always had a progressive rate if they went over their allocated water. That's why these allocations were important, and that's why somebody like Barbara is very concerned that that allocation remains intact. I believe that's her position. And
could
I think
you,
a lot of
people
will feel that.
Could you move the microphone just a little closer?
Really? Yeah. I usually talk so loud that my wife's always telling me, quiet down. Okay now?
Better.
Yeah. Get that out of my face. So, at this point, I think the division is proposing a total overhaul of our rate structure, a total elimination of the conservation rate that was established and approved by Judge Goodall in Goodwill in 2008. Ms. Schmidt was a part of that hearing, and I think she would corroborate that at that time we were actually plotted for coming up with an innovative incentive to conserve, because we always had the big stick to conserve by fairly severe overage rates. So it's just confusing to us why the division in this mere 6 or 7 years has decided to try and do a more or less one-size-fits-all policy regarding, I guess, all water companies, but little water companies. From day one, it's been emphasized that they're the big fear in these little water companies, and they go belly up, the developer runs them for a while, finishes the development, moves on, and leaves them a can of worms for the people to deal with and for the commission to deal with. And I understand that. And they've also been concerned that we haven't had a reserve account, and that we've actually some years had to subsidize, in fact, many years. And it's even been written in the stipulations of past rate hearings that Dameron Corp has agreed to subsidize. The subsidies have been fairly minor some years. If we've had a couple of pumps go out or big repairs or several meters that needed replacing, I suppose in a given year we could have fairly large subsidies. But the biggest subsidy we've had the last few years was paying off a division of water resources loan to the company to put a west side transmission line in. The DPU felt that the west side transmission line was more of a developer expense than a water company expense, so they took that out. That payment is $50,000 a year. With that $50,000 a year taken out of the water company, we would definitely be in the black. With this 25% increase that we're proposing, we would be in the black and be able to create the reserve account that Mr. Duncan and Mr. Long are concerned that we create. And I don't think that's a bad idea, by the way. With the rate increase that the division is proposing, it would add about an additional $40,000 of revenue. So our rate increase would raise the waterworks revenues about $50,000 a year. They're currently around $200,000 a year, with approximately 25% across the board. It would raise our revenues about $50,000 to $250,000 a year. The division's proposal would raise our revenues to about $290,000 to $95,000 a year. So you might wonder how stupid I could be to come in here and fight another $40,000 a year coming into the water company, but I would imagine you could understand that the water company and my running a very quality water company and me having very fair rates, we've always tried to tag the city of St. George's rates and never be above them, is important, right? I mean, the development company owns the water company, so that we might have to subsidize the water company now and then is not particularly painful, because we want people to love our water company. We are selling land, which is worthless without water, as we all know. So at the point that we have to replace a pump, build a tank for redundancy, drill another well just in case, we're an isolated community. We're miles from any other community. We aren't connected by water line. If we had a major disaster, we would get by it. We have a standby generator in case the power went out for a couple of days. We could pump water for, you know, as long as there were power. Or, well, we have a pump. We could even pump water out of a diesel tank in the ground. So we would get by, but there could be other kinds of disasters. I don't know, an earthquake that destroyed our tanks, you know, our pumping system or something like that. I mean, so from day one, I've always built redundancy into the system. And the division felt that that redundancy was really building for future customers. And I think I can understand that they could take that position. But in my mind, the redundancy was required because we were a small system, a long ways from anybody. And so we have got excess storage. We've got three pumps that we can put online. One of them can pump, any of two of them can pump all the water we ever need at any one time, and the third one could pump the water we need for culinary only. So my whole case here, I think the division has done a very in-depth study. I think I've learned a lot, and I think taking that $50,000, moving it over to the development company is fine. We did it. We're making the payment this month out of Dameron Corp. And so what I would say is that we I love our conservation rate. I think it was a very good move in the right direction. It was an incentive for people to conserve. And we're not in the most pecunious of communities, but we are have got a lot of people that live pretty close to the ground, and $100 a year savings is actually quite a big deal to them. And that's, they can save $100+ a year if they go on the conservation rate and agree to conserve and practice conservation. And it's very easy, because even the conservation rate allows them 400 gallons a day. The average water usage, not counting the irrigators, in the valley is a little under 500 gallons a day. So even the big lots, the 5-acre lots, if they don't have an irrigation share, they're still coming in at an average of 500 gallons a day. So the 400 gallons a day isn't highly punitive, and the overage rate, the first tier of overage rate, if they used 24,000 gallons a month throughout the summer and then paid their low rate in the winter, they would then just about match the person on the first tier. So they could use 24,000 gallons for just $6 or $7 over what the person on the first tier would be. But then it becomes very punitive, as you'll see our schedule. It goes to 250 a thousand and eventually 350 a thousand, which is a very punitive rate. So we would like to keep the irrigation rate, we would like to keep the tiers, and we would like to keep the irrigation rate low. I mean, you're leaving the irrigation rate, but the division's proposal is to raise the irrigation rate by about 80%. Our proposal would raise the irrigation rate to around, I think it was 28%. I'm going from 25 to 32 cents. The conservation rate, raising it 25%, would have only brought it to $23 a month. Raising the standard rate from 30 to 38, 25%, raised $38 a month. So I have said to the division, in an attempt to compromise and us be able to maybe come into this hearing a little more unified than we are, that I saw compromise being highly possible, another 10 or 15 or even 20% increase in that conservation rate. So they went from 18, rather than going to 23, to $28 a month, but still $10 less than the standard rate would give, still leave the incentive, but make up a lot of the revenue that, that the division is concerned about us losing. The irrigation rate, the same thing. I'm proposing it go to 32 cents. Well, that's the one I was talking about. The irrigation rate, we would be willing to go to 35 cents, 38 cents. If we have to go to 45 cents, I can't say that it's a terrible rate, but we have a lot of large irrigation customers. I send an exhibit. Should I break that out? May I get That's up, Your nice. Honor, and show you this map? The valley is very, well, you may want to see it. All this green.
I'll look on the one that I have.
You, that little one?
Show
okay.
That one
okay. Okay. Just last day, anybody? Put it up there. Anyway, if anybody wants to look at it up close. All the green on the map is where we have irrigation. The little dots indicate, the tiny dots indicate a 1 acre foot irrigation share. You see those scattered all over the valley. The bigger dot indicates
The microphone.
Oh, sorry, I'm in trouble with that. The larger dots indicate a 2 to 3 acre foot irrigation share they may have. And then the solid areas indicate that there's basically irrigation water allocated for those lots. And as I said in my testimony, we are trying to become a horse community. We've always been trying to become a horse community, but we're really very interested in becoming an agricultural community as well. And we have various I don't know whether, since I didn't file these as an exhibit, do I have a right to show you a few pictures?
You can move for their entry into the record, and we'll see if anybody has an objection.
These are just pictures of the irrigated vineyards, the park, and things like that.
Would you let Ms. Schmidt take a look at those?
Thank you. This is just to give you an idea that we're just not a piece of flat land out in the desert. It's an incredibly beautiful valley and community surrounded by mountains on all sides. And a lot of agriculture is coming in. There's now 8 acres of vineyards planted, and State Lands has agreed to sell this developer, this grower, 15 more acres. And in the long term, he wants to have about 35 to 40 acres. This is a 1 acre organic garden. Doing food for 2 restaurants. This fellow owns for farm to table organic produce.
Excuse me, I'm having difficulty hearing you.
Want to start over?
Well, just talk louder.
We're trying to create an agricultural community. I'm showing the judge the aspects of that are already in operation. This is our community park. This is more of the orchard. And this picture didn't print very well, but I brought it because I wanted to show you that a lot of people just leave the sagebrush. A lot of people live on their 400 or 500 gallons a day and just, you know, have sagebrush and trees because it's heavily sagebrush. All the land, if nobody plowed it up, there would be this tree-covered land and sagebrush-covered land, and you don't really have to do gardening. So our position is that our rate structure, I guess I need to, and this was
could
in the
you,
paper.
Could you use the microphone, please?
Yeah,
thank you.
I'm in trouble with that. I have it tied around my neck. If I could just read from yesterday's paper in St. George, the Daily Spectrum. The recent results of the Envision Utah survey, where 52,000 people participated, as it pertains to southwestern Utah, Washington and Iron Counties rated improving food self-sufficiency as the highest priority. Maintaining open space provided by farms and ranches were rated second and third. In order to make this possible, many southwest Utahns are willing to stop the building of homes and businesses on high quality agricultural land. So St. George has lost its agriculture. I mean, when I was a kid growing up, the Washington Fields and Enterprise, they were truck farms serving Las Vegas and Southern California. When the Colorado Aqueduct came in and the big dam systems in the mid part of the last century, it wiped out those businesses, and because the Imperial Valley was closer to the population centers and they were getting essentially free water. So the truck farm industry and the local produce root farm industry in southern Utah sort of went away. But there's a lot of movement back toward it. There's a lot of encouragement for people like this fellow that's growing it for his own restaurants. He's got a partner that may join in that would like to grow it to serve Las Vegas restaurants that want to be farm to table. So we're, as at build out, intending to have 40 to 42% of our water allocated to agriculture, whether it's horse pasture, whether it's people growing produce, whether it's people with goats, or just orchards, vineyards, whatever it comes out to be. So I'm just going to refer to my notes for just a second, see if I've covered about everything. The thing that I say I'd like to emphasize that in my thing I sent in on June 30th, is that the other reason to have a lot of water in agriculture is that it really does add not only the aesthetics to the community, but it adds sustainability to the community and crisis resistance, because our tariff gives us the right to turn off irrigators at any time. If we have a pump go out and we have to use our small pump, we could turn off our irrigators. If we had a major crisis of some kind, we could turn off the irrigators. So if almost half our water is allocated to irrigation, it actually saves us from ever being in the position of Marin County a few years ago, you might remember, when they were having to put bricks in their toilet to get by. So it's a shame that the agricultural water in the St. George and Washington Fields and Hurricane Fields is all going to culinary. Someday, if they decide to grow to 300,000 to 500,000 to 600,000 people, they will have crises. We won't. We'll have redundancy of water, redundancy of storage, redundancy of pumping systems. I've emphasized why I like the conservation rate. The irrigation rate I would emphasize more, and I think Ms. Yelly is going to get into this and probably have more to say on it than I will, because she's living it. She has a greenhouse. They grow, I'm assuming, a lot of their own produce. I think they have fruit trees. They're not alone. Many, many people do. And some people have, and if you see these large things along the highway where the large green strips are, those are the people that got irrigation water given to them with their lot. But the lot, the land was restricted. It could only be irrigated on, no barns, no farm buildings, only fences and irrigated crop. And if they didn't irrigate the crop, they needed to, and it had been irrigated, they needed to nurse it back into sagebrush or wildflowers. So we've got a lot of water tied up along the highway, and the goal was to, so as you drive through the community, you're not looking at backyards of homes, you're looking at these irrigated pastures. Now, it's only worked so well because a lot of people haven't either, they bought the land, they weren't really farmers, so they've left the sagebrush, like that one picture I showed you. But some have. Some have goats. Some guy has about 50 goats on his little 2 or 3 acres. A lot of people have horses. This great Vinter guy has now got 8 acres planted and going to do more. But I'm saying raising the irrigation rate too much could really be a big disincentive for these people that we're trying to motivate to use those water, because we deeded those water rights to these people. I can't get them back. If they don't use them, they're subject to being lost. So keeping a reasonably low irrigation rate, I think, is very important to us. And I hope it can be more what we're proposing, some 32 cents per 1,000 gallons, which does, I believe, cover our costs. When we applied for the rate in 1987, we said we were coming up with a revenue neutral rate. And by that, I meant paid the electricity cost, which at that time was about 10 cents a 1,000 gallons. It's now about 15 cents a 1,000 gallons, and their share of repair and maintenance of the pumps. So that was the sector. There was a revenue neutral rate. There was, I know the division is going to make the case that this is a subsidy of those people with irrigation rates by all those people that don't have them. Our position is, it's not a subsidy. It's a great incentive for everybody. You'll hear this from Ms. Goffin when I have her stand up to speak. I mean, everybody loves the fact that, oh, there's a pasture with horses. Somebody's doing something with the land. The great thing is just the first 5 acres just went in a year ago, and the next three just went in the spring. People love it. They drive out of their way to go see it. It's a very big hit. Agriculture, because it's going away, I guess, is more appreciated than ever, is what I'm saying, and because it's almost totally gone away from the lowlands of Ivan, St. George, Washington, and Hurricane Fields. There's all very, very little, and it's all destined to go into homes as well. A community like ours is one of the rare ones that's really setting aside significant water for agriculture. So I think that that saving that reasonably low irrigation rate is really important to the community as well, and I don't think anybody would say, I feel resentful that I'm subsidizing those people that own irrigation rates and I don't have one. I just don't think you would hear that. I don't think you have heard it. I don't think the division has heard it from anybody that's gotten involved and studied the case. So all I can say is, you know, I can hold this up and remind you that we have drought situations that are coming our way. They're on us in southern Utah, and they're not for this wet summer, that be on you up here, and they'll be on us all soon enough. And so basically getting people to use less water, learn how to use less water, have an incentive to use less water is good for the entire southwestern United States. We happen to be only about half filled out, so we have enough water that we're not so tight that it would really be. It's not that big a deal for us, but it's going to be a big deal for us because things are booming. The state land that we're developing now is going to go fast. The community will be a community of 700 or 800 homes within 10 years, say. And we will be reaching the build-out of our water, et cetera. And at that time, if I had people that really had an incentive, you know, the division has made the point that in the 7 years since the conservation rate was approved, we haven't done any new subdivisions. It's been this crash time, so we haven't done new subdivisions. So nobody's been forced onto it, and only 14 people have converted to it. And that's a shock. And so in a town hall meeting the other night, I had an opportunity to speak to several different tables of people, and And I said, one, why didn't you get involved in this rate case? You knew about it, you sent out notice the end of January. Why didn't you go on the website and learn about what the cutoff dates and so forth were? And the end of April, we sent out another thing. Don't forget the rate case. Go on the website, learn about the rate case. Then the 15th of May, 15 days later, we had our annual meeting. I stood up at the meeting to give my developer report and water report, and I said, let me see a show of hands. How many people of you have gone on the website now? This is, you got a notice the end of December, you got another notice 15 days ago on your water bill with a little write-up on the back of the bill of what the rate, the case was all about, and how to go on the website, how to reach Mr. Long and Mr. Duncan. Nobody, not one person raised their hand. So last week in this little visioning sessions that the board is holding, I had a chance to talk to five or six tables of people, five or six at a time, and I said, why the disinterest in this thing? And their main comment was, the water is so cheap, and you've always fought for, you know, doing the right thing. One guy said, I went on the website and I just couldn't understand all the pages that the division was presenting. I didn't have time to study it. I just figured you'd take care of me. So, you know, it's a kind of complacency we have in our democracy these days, unfortunately. It's a little surprising. I think if they had gotten word that we were going to raise the rates, double the rates or something like that, they may have shown a little more interest. But unfortunately, they really haven't. And Joyce Goffin, she's a member of the Board of Trustees of the Dameron Valley Landowners Association, and she has got a lot of experience in, I'll let her explain it, but she has a lot of experience that's going to be incredibly valuable to the board. The board has sometimes been great boards. Barbara's been on the board, she's been president of the board in the past. Sometimes the boards have been dynamic and tried to do things, sometimes they've tried to do things too aggressively, but quite often they just not been kind of lethargic and haven't really been very proactive. This lady is extremely proactive and she's really stirring things up. She's the one that's creating these visioning groups and things. So we will be moving toward, I think, incorporation in a few years. And that's, I think, at the size we are, we're already bigger than most incorporated communities in the state. But at this point, do I have an opportunity after the division to have any kind of further comments, or am I through?
I think you'll have more opportunity to speak. You'll definitely be able to respond to what the division presents. Let me just pause for a minute. I didn't swear Mr. Pace in because I didn't realize he was going to proffer so extensively. He is representing himself, so I think it's probably appropriate to allow him to proffer, but if the division or the intervener would like him sworn, I'll do that now.
I would prefer that he be sworn, please.
All right. Mr. Pace, would you stand up and raise your right hand, please? Do you solemnly swear that the testimony and evidence that you provide today and that you have provided so far in this proceeding is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and that you do so under penalty of perjury?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. Let's see.
So at this point, and not that I won't, when Joyce finishes, maybe come up with a couple of other brief comments, but I pretty much will wrap mine up and ask Ms. Joyce Goffin to make her presentation.
All right. Why don't you come on up here and we'll let you take the stand, I guess.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Can you tap that and make sure it's on for me? Okay. And would you raise your right hand? Do you solemnly swear that the testimony and evidence you provide today is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and this you do under penalty of perjury?
I do.
Thank you. And would you state your full name for the record?
My name is Joyce Goffin, and that is spelled G-A-U, F as in Frank, I, N as in Nancy. I have one of those names too.
Pardon me? The division will have some cross-examination questions for Mr. Pace and perhaps Ms. Goffin. Would it be appropriate to ask those after they have both completed their testimony?
If you're comfortable with that, I think that's fine.
I'm very comfortable with that. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Pace, go ahead with your questions for your witness.
Please speak.
Thank you very much. I was elected to the Dameron Valley Landowners Board of Trustees in May of this year. And at that time, I had proposed an opportunity to do some community visioning events, which is something very new for our small community. And in going through this process, we've heard comments from many of our landowners in small group discussions, as Mr. Pace indicated earlier. Many people seem unaware of the fact that the water rates are going up. Those that got the notices in their bill of the later meetings said, why is the state asking for such a high water rate tax hike? Well, they see it as a tax, a hike in our water rates. And they just don't seem to be really aware of this. I was a lifelong resident of Salt Lake City, and I bought my property in Dameron Valley in 1993. We built our home in 97. We've lived there full time for 8 years. So I have a rather long history in Dameron Valley. During that time, the community has grown, and I've heard very few people complain about our water services in the valley. I have 1.6 acres in the subdivision called Pinion Hills. It's a very forested area. Due to the drought over the last number of years, we've rigged up a system of sprinkling over our hill that we use to help sustain our pinion and juniper trees, and it's been very beneficial. We have only had one interruption in our service in the time that we've been there that was unplanned, and I believe one planned interruption in our service. Our water quality is excellent. My background is public health. This is my 42nd year in public health, so I'm very critically aware of the needs for clean and healthy water. During the board meeting, Mr. Pace spoke with our board, and I sent a letter electronically to Mr. Long and to the Public Service Commission. I have a signed copy of the letter from the board. Can we?
Any objection?
I'd like to take a look at it, please.
Sure. That would be appropriate. Mr. Long acknowledged receipt of the letter electronically. And essentially, during that discussion, the board decided that there were four key points that we wanted to make about the rate structure proposals. That we support the conservation rate for Dameron Valley. The fact that a number of people are a very small number of people are using it is, again, I believe, because the water rates are very, very affordable right now. There are only two of us in our home, and we've never exceeded our standard water allotment. The rate structure for the irrigation rates is really important because we have so much green space. Okay, shall I give this?
Do you have an objection, Ms. Schmidt?
The division has no objection.
And did you look at it, Ms. Young?
Yes, I did.
No objection. All right, thank you. And Mr. Pace, do you want this marked as one of your exhibits? Have you looked at it as well?
I don't know that I've seen the final draft. Is it going to be read into the record, or are you just...
Do you want to read it into the record?
I
would like
that we need
into the record.
The whole letter?
Yeah.
Okay, well then, so this is in reference to the Dameron Valley Water Works case rebuttal docket 2025-1 to Mark Long. Dear Mr. Long, the Dameron Valley Landowners Association Board of Directors is in full support of the Dameron Valley Water Works 2015 proposed rate structure. Some of our board members have lived in the valley since 1993, and during that time, Mr. Brooks Pace and Dameron Valley Water Works have provided the highest level of water quality and service delivery to all landowners. The proposed DVWW structure was developed to meet the specific needs of our unique community. We believe that this rate structure is the best option for property owners for the following reasons. The rate structure affords property owners an option to choose a conservation rate. We believe that in today's climate, having an opportunity to practice voluntary conservation that includes a financial incentive is a model for the rest of the state. The rate structure provides low irrigation rates to incentivize landowners with large lots that service community green spaces. All residents benefit from well-maintained lots that provide grass and feed for animals while reducing weeds that may spread to other properties. The large amount of irrigation water in the system has been set aside as insurance against a prolonged drought. If it's priced too high, people will not use it. Landowners have not protested the proposed rate structure to the DVLA. During recent community planning activities, positive comments were presented by landowners. We understand that the Department of Public Utilities has concerns regarding the establishment of a reserve fund of an adequate size to ensure that Dameron Valley Water Works will be able to address any potential large equipment or structure losses. We understand that Mr. Pace has agreed to establish such a reserve fund. He believes that this can be done within the proposed rate structure. And one of our members will attend the hearing in Salt Lake City. We request that you support the proposed rate structure to ensure that Dameron Valley will continue to have one of the finest private water systems in the state of Utah. Thank you for your consideration. Sincerely, letter signed by Robert Allen, President of the Dameron Valley Landowners Association Board of Directors.
And Mr. Pace, do you want this marked as an exhibit?
Yes, please.
All right, so just so everyone knows and the record is clear, I've marked the map as the applicant's exhibit one. I've marked the pictures as one exhibit with multiple pages as exhibit two, and we'll mark this as the applicant's exhibit three.
Anything else?
Just again, to add something on the visioning sessions. We have a unique community in Dameron Valley. Our developer lives and is one of our neighbors in that community. And that makes for a very good community. It is unusual. I'm not sure that there are rules and regulations that cover that. What I have learned by living in this small rural community is that we have many very conservative neighbors. And they are very suspect of government entities in general, and especially the ones that seem far removed from our community. I believe that this uniqueness makes us a very special place. However, we do want to ensure a solid future for our water system. We believe that the proposal that Mr. Pace and the company have placed before us today will help us get there in the future. I believe that. Those are my primary comments, unless there are questions.
Questions from the division?
No questions for this witness, but I do have some for Mr. Pace.
Okay. Ms. Yelly, do you have any questions for this witness?
Just a couple. When you did the visioning, how many landowners are there in Dameron Valley?
There are about 395 homes.
I think we have 390 homes. They're not all occupied at any given time, so you could say there are over 600 landowners, I believe.
And of that number, how many spoke to you specifically about the water tariff proposal?
They weren't speaking to me specifically. They were speaking in groups, and they were recording their comments. And I believe we've had 70 people, at least, that have attended those sessions now, at least 70 people who have commented. Not just on the water issues, but on the vision for Dameron Valley.
And I assume that of those 70, not all commented on the water tariff.
No, not all commented on the water specifically, you're right.
You posted Mr. Pace's rebuttal letter on the DVLA website, is that correct?
No, I don't know. I didn't post it myself. I'm not sure if it has been posted on the website.
Okay, so you're not aware of that. Have you reviewed any of the Division of Public Utilities spreadsheets and mathematical analyses?
Not in detail. I did look at some of them, and I understand some of the reasoning for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Will you explain to me just a little bit what the DVLA is, whom it represents, and how it operates? I don't quite understand what its relationship with the water company is or with the residents.
When Dameron Valley was set up and the articles of incorporation that were set up for Dameron Valley, Mr. Pace put together a board of trustees for the Landowners Association. These individuals, it's a board of five members. They're elected by the people who attend the annual meeting. People can also send in a vote if they're unable to attend the annual meeting. These five voluntary members receive no compensation for their services. And they have the oversight to enforce CC&Rs and to gain community input and to protect community resources, with the exception of our fire services district. We have a special services district that encompasses fire services, the firehouse, fire department, and so on.
Okay. So in a simplistic view, but to help me, the DVLA would be sort of
like
equivalent
homeowners
to an HOA,
yes,
just a very big one.
Yes.
So it operates under, through, by contract with the homeowners, basically.
Yes.
When the homeowners buy a plot, they buy it subject to the governance of the DVLA.
Yes, they are automatically made members of the DVLA.
Okay, thank you. That's very helpful.
All right.
Okay. Any other questions for this witness? Okay, yours.
Thank you, Joyce.
Thank you. And would you like to ask Mr. Pace your questions now?
I would, thank you.
Okay, go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Pace.
Good morning, Ms. Schmidt.
I believe that you talked about the division requiring another entity other than Dameron Valley Water Works to pay the $50,000 year payment on a loan. Did I recall correctly?
Yes. They requested it be paid, and I agreed to pay it from the development company, the Dameron Corporation.
Is that because the division believed that the expense was not a proper expense for the water company?
They believed it was not right. I argued with them that at least half of it should be considered that, because we were in desperate need for additional source. We have three tanks. Two of them are by the wells, and one of them is remote, about 3 miles as the crow flies away, on the far west end of the valley. And so when the water comes out of the wells, of course it wants to go to those tanks first. When they're full, we have a shutoff valve, so it forces it back down into the valley, but it has trouble getting to our west side tank because all the users are in between. So we built a line that circumvented all the homes and went out to the west side in an attempt to get more, to balance the system better. And basically it's working, so I felt some of that cost. I felt all the cost until I had my meetings with Mr. Long a couple of months ago down south. The loan was made to Dameron Valley Water Works by the Division of Water Resources, and I didn't really have another thought about it. It was the third loan I had taken from the division to build pumps and tanks and things. In the 94 I took a loan, and in 2004 I took a loan to build water, deeper wells, bigger tanks, new tanks, etc. But at this point I didn't argue it. I didn't mind getting expenses out of the water company because I was trying to get my rate approved. So taking that 50, it's one pocket, right? I mean, Dameron Corp owns 100% of the water company. So for me to pay that expense out of Dameron Corp, it saved the $50,000 subsidy I was giving to the water company. So it was an easy decision to make. I felt some of it should have been left into my rate base, but that doesn't matter either.
Mr. Pace, you are aware, though, that Dameron Valley Water Works and Dameron Valley Corporation are separate entities, correct?
Yes, right.
Do they have separate sets of books?
Yes, they always have. They were consolidated, but they were separate bank accounts, separate set of books from day one. It was just a division of Dameron Corp until, you might remember, it was Judge Goodwill in 2008 that said, I suggest that you create a separate company for your water company, which we did within the year.
Thank you. Speaking of separate things, is it true that Dameron Valley Water Works does not have a separate system for its irrigation water?
Right.
Could Dameron Valley Water Works put in a separate system for its irrigation water delivery?
For several million dollars, we could build a new set of wells and a new set of transmission line for 2 miles into the valley, but it wouldn't be practical.
Did I hear you say that you, and I'm not sure if it's the water company or Dameron Corp or you personally, is subsidizing the irrigation rates? Or did I mishear?
Well, the division believes that I'm subsidizing the irrigation rates. I don't believe I'm subsidizing the irrigation rates. I'm sometimes, in the past, have been subsidizing the company, but I don't think the irrigation rates were a part of it. When they were approved in 87, it was understood they were to be revenue neutral.
Do you or Dameron Corp have any irrigation shares or water rights in Dameron Valley?
Do I personally?
Well, sorry, I should ask the questions. Do you personally have any irrigation shares?
One of our family-owned companies, of which I own a very small portion of, holds all of the water that is not being used. They hold about 500 acre feet for future development.
Thank you. If all the ratepayers chose to convert to the conservation rate that you proposed, would revenues from that cover all of Dameron Valley Water Works' fixed expenses?
If it did, not be in the next year for another rate increase on the conservation rate.
Thank you.
But you don't know what the numbers would be.
14 in the last 7 years have converted to it voluntarily. Those in the future would be forced on it if it still exists. So the system would have about 40% of its customers that would be on the conservation rate. All of the new state land that we're developing, 250 lots, would be on it, plus 55 more lots we're developing in Pinyon Hills. So there would be about 300 that would be forced on the conservation rate. There would be 500 that would not, unless they wanted to voluntarily convert to it. I wish more would convert to it, and I don't think enough will that it'll ever be a big hole in our revenues. But if everybody did, or 90% did, and it was a big hole in the revenues, yes, I would have to subsidize until I could come in and get a rate increase.
At this point, though, have you performed a study to see if, for example, 90% of the ratepayers' current and future converted to the conservation rate, if that would cover your fixed costs?
I can just tell you off the top of my head, if say we went to $28 rather than $38, it would be $10 per month, so $120 a year per customer. So if that 350 customers did decide to convert, it would amount to what, $35,000. Could I handle the $35,000 shortfall? Yes, because I'm going to now be creating a $50,000, I don't remember exactly what the division's method of determining what my reserve account gets made up of. I think it'll be the amount of depreciation expense, or maybe it'll be a percent of total revenue, but we will have a reserve account, and we would be able to get through a $35,000 shortfall in a year if 90% of them converted.
Is it your understanding then that the capital reserve account fund that the division is proposing could be used as a filler to make up insufficient revenues?
I think it could be used for a filler for any kind of crisis that we face. I think it's primarily intended for a major repair or something like that, however.
I would just like the commission to take note that the division has addressed the proper uses of the reserve account in its testimony.
Thank you.
Those are all my questions.
Ms. Yelly, do you have any questions for Mr. Pace?
Just for clarifications, Mr. Pace, we've been confused about what your proposed tariff is, and I am looking actually at an exhibit to Mr. Long's testimony, and I want to confirm that this is your proposal. I'll take myself as an example. Okay, I think I have an 800 gallon per day allocation as one tapping, right? That's what you get
right.
Okay, and so it says that you would pay your base rate, then you would pay tier one at $1.75 per 1,000 gallons, and then the irrigation rate would kick in?
You would pay your base rate on the 24,000, then you go to irrigation, then you go to, well, look, you haven't converted from your two tapping, or have you?
We're confused about that too, to be perfectly honest.
Pardon me, may I ask who we is?
That's a good question. I should say me. I'll say myself. I'm confused.
Let's just make sure that we're all looking at the same thing. Are you looking at Exhibit 3 that's attached to the SIR rebuttal testimony?
Yes, it's...
So, Mr. Pace, will you find that and look at it with us?
Hold it up. Let me see the sheet you got.
And while we're finding it, I'll just express thanks to the division for preparing this chart. It's extremely helpful.
May we go off the record for a moment? I might have an extra copy.
She might have an extra copy.
Well, we've got it. It's just I'm not sure which sheet is looking from a distance. Just walk down the bar and find out which one it is.
It's the latest one we filed.
Right.
Mark filed.
Yeah, and it's.
I don't know if it's in this one.
I have another one.
Do you mind? Let me see, because some of these things are very hard to follow.
All right, and Ms., do we all have this exhibit three? Mr. Pace, do you?
I do, yes.
Do you want to look at this?
Yes.
Okay, just hold on. And the division has it. Ms. Yelly, you have it, and I have it. So let me just make sure I understand some of these terms. If you look at the very top chart, which talks about the current rate schedule that you have, in the second big column that says 800 gallon per day allocation, is the 800 gallons per day equivalent with the term one tapping that you've been using? Okay. And the 1,200 gallons per day is equivalent with a 1.5 tapping?
Right.
And 1,600 gallons is equivalent with a 2 tapping?
Yes.
Okay. And my question is, how does a homeowner get a tapping or 1.5 tappings or 2 tappings? What process does the purchaser go through to get that base amount?
Like I said, in the beginning, we did 2 5-acre lot subdivisions.
So wait, who's we?
Well, Dameron Corp, the Dameron Royal Corp.
So Dameron Corp is the developer. And you own that.
Right.
And it owns the water company.
Right.
Okay, keep going.
Okay, so in 1975, when we bought the land, I was living in Vegas and was not intending to get into an in-depth development, and we started doing 5-acre lots. Then we fell in love with the valley, realized we had water to do more, and we went to 1-acre lots. But all the 5-acre lots were given the 2 tapping, right?
Okay, so that was just part of the purchase of a 5-acre lot.
Right, what they got. In fact, I brought along some of the CC&R so you could look at these, because water was always spelled out very clearly in the CC&R.
Okay.
Early 2 subdivisions.
Okay, but I just want to make sure that I'm with you, because I wasn't at the prior hearing, and I did read some of it, but if back in the beginning I bought a 5-acre lot, 2 tappings came with that, but that's not a share. It's not the same as purchasing
a share. It's not an irrigation share.
Okay. Right. And what that means is that I'm allowed to use 16,000 gallons per day.
Per 1,600 per day, 48,000 per month.
Oh, I think I have an extra zero in there.
I think you do have an extra zero in there.
Oh, you do, yeah.
1,600 gallons per day at the base rate, whatever the base rate might be, because over time, of course, it's going to have to be adjusted.
Right.
Okay.
And then we did about 100 of those lots, 100 large, or 80 or 90, of those that got the 2 tappings. Then the next phase was 1 to 3-acre lots, and we gave them 1.5 tappings.
Okay.
So those are the 1,200 gallons a day column.
1 to 3-acre lots. And again, that use rate came with the purchase.
Right.
Okay.
Then, from then on, we went, and there were about 75 lots in that subdivision.
Okay.
And so from then on, everything that we developed until we adopted the conservation rate a few years ago, and we haven't done any new subdividing since. So everybody, all the new subdivisions then went on 800 gallon per day allocation.
Okay, so how large are those lots generally?
Generally, there's about 50 of them that are 3/4 acre, and all the rest are 1 to 3 acre.
So between 3/4 acre to 3 acres.
Right.
And those people get 800 gallons per day at the base rate.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
And then the conservation rate. The state requires a 0.45 acre foot, which is 400 gallons a day. That's what they
want to make sure a water company has to serve their customers. So that's what the conservation rate became, is that minimum that the state would allow a lot to be developed with.
May I ask a clarifying question?
Please do.
Mr. Pace, when you say the state requires 400 gallons, do you mean the Division of Public Utilities or the Division of Drinking Water, Water Quality?
DEQ.
Thank you.
Drinking Water.
Okay.
I went over this conservation rate with them, with Ken Boosfield and other people at the Division of Drinking Water. We had meetings about it. They felt good about it. They felt we were going in the right direction too.
Okay, so as you look on this exhibit, and which is the division's work, not yours.
Right.
Is this accurate? Do you stipulate that these are accurate numbers and this accurately represents your current and proposed rate structures?
It's our current, yes. Okay, is there proposed here? Okay, let me see if the proposed is correct. Yes.
Okay. All right, Ms. Yelly, I think we're all looking at the same thing, and I think I basically understand the numbers. So go ahead with whatever questions you have.
Well, I think that answered the question that you would have a base rate plus a tier, and then the irrigation rate would kick in.
What, Your Honor, one of the things that you maybe didn't understand, and I'm wondering if you're confused, you had 48,000 as your allocation per month, right? 96,000 in 2 months. That would be a two tapping because you have a 5-acre lot. But we gave people a right, if they had an irrigation share, to convert back to the one tapping so they didn't have to use 96,000 in a 2 month period before they got to the cheap water, right? And I think you converted because Lisa told me that that's how you were being charged. There was a little form you had to sign to say, I give up that other tapping.
My predecessor in interest may have converted, I do not know. Although they never built or used the water, so I don't know.
Did they have an irrigation share?
Yes, they sold the water right to us along with the lot.
Hmm. Who was it?
Christensen.
Quite a long time ago, I don't remember, but Lisa claims the she's billing you 24,000, then you go to irrigation, and if you go over your two irrigation shares, then you go to your overage.
That's what I believe it is.
But there are people with irrigation shares that have not wanted to give up their two tapping allocations for the simple reason in their mind it was like giving up a water right.
Back to the point, however, Mr. Pace, just so I concluded this question, looking at this chart, I think it's self-evident that everybody pays the base rate and one tier and then moves into their irrigation rate.
Well, some people pay, whatever their tier, whatever their allocation is, they pay their allocation. If it's got to be at least 800 gallons a day. If they are on the conservation rate, they have to convert to the 800 gallon a day allocation. But there are people on 1,200 gallon a day allocation that have to use that before they go to irrigation. There are people on 1,600 gallon a day allocation that have to use that before they go to the irrigation rate.
This would suggest that there are four rate classes in the Dameron Valley Water Company. In actuality, aren't there a number of other categories of rate billing categories where people have different tappings or allowed irrigation water without owning a share and so forth?
Name an example.
Well, I can. I'm just asking.
Well, I mean, the only person, remember in the drought years, our tariff gives us the right to do it. We have let everybody, last year we did it because we thought it was going to be an incredible drought year like we were having in 04 and 05 and 06. And in those years, it was so dry, and because we had the excess water, we let everybody, whether they owned an irrigation share or not, have one extra irrigation share for that particular year. So that we have done four times, last year and in 04, 05, and 06. But that was, if you had two irrigation shares, then you had three to use that particular year.
I don't think we were billed that way.
You absolutely were billed that way. It cost us about $8,000 last year by doing that.
I think my bills are in exhibit.
Yeah, they are. I've got it right here. Oh, I think I've got yours.
One other question. Is it your understanding then that whatever rate structure is approved by the Public Service Commission, that would apply to all water deliveries through the Dameron Valley Water Company system?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any follow-up?
No follow-up from the division.
Okay. Mr. Pace, anything more that you want to discuss right now before we move on to the division with witnesses?
No, I'm ready for them.
Okay. All right, Ms. Schmidt, go ahead.
Can we just take about a two-minute break?
We need a two-minute break.
That'd be all right.
Okay, so we'll go off the record.
Your Honor, Ms. Goffin would like to be excused.
I think there's the record on. No, just sorry, hold on just a minute. Are you ready?
Hang on, I have to flip the switch down here.
All right, we're back on the record. Does any party have anticipate meeting Ms. Goffin back?
The division does not.
No, and Mr. Pace?
I'm fine with releasing her as right, your then, granddaughter.
Then you're excused.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you for your help today.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Ms. Schmidt.
Thank you. The division would like to call, or actually before I begin with the witnesses, I'd like just to make a brief statement if I may.
Please, go right ahead.
This case has followed a rather unusual procedural path. Normally, in rate cases such as this, testimony is pre-filed with exhibits, and then at the hearing, those exhibits and testimony are admitted, and cross-examination takes place on those documents. Here, on Friday afternoon, the 7th, pursuant to the procedural schedule, which called for a witness list and exhibit list, Ms. Yelly and Mr. Pace filed witness lists that, for both of them, included people that had not been previously introduced to this proceeding. Ms. Yelly's witness and exhibit list also listed some new exhibits, which the division was not aware until that time that she intended to use at hearing. And the division would like to note that Ms. Yelly has filed no pre-filed testimony. However, at this time, the division is making no due process objections or requesting a continuance. And the division supports the commission having a full and fair record upon which to decide its case. Additionally, yesterday, August 10th, the division received an email copy of Intervenor Yelly's Memorandum of Points and Authorities. I believe the memorandum addresses what it asserts to be the relationship between the rate-making charge of the Public Service Commission and what I will call traditional Utah water statutes, that found in Title 73 of the Utah Code. The division would like the opportunity to respond to Ms. Yelly's Memorandum of Points and Authorities and requests that it be granted permission to do so and be granted until October 25th to do so.
Any objection from anyone?
I may have one. I mean, to drag this case off for 2 months, I have an objection to prolong this case for two more months.
Oh.
Without even knowing what her memorandum is asking.
Pardon me, I appear to have said October rather than August. I meant August.
Oh. Okay.
Well, so we're talking 2 weeks.
The judge has a month to make her decision anyway, so that's fine.
Thank you, and I apologize for misspeaking. I was perhaps thinking of the fall.
Ms. Yelly, any objection?
If there were anything in there that called for a rebuttal, would that be okay?
Does the division have any objection to a rebuttal?
The division would prefer that there be no rebuttal, as Ms. Yelly ostensibly made her case in her memorandum of points and authorities, but the division believes in having the commission provided a full and fair record, so the division would have no objection as long as her rebuttal was filed in a very timely fashion, perhaps 5 or 7 days.
And it would have to be restricted to arguments raised in your memorandum of points and authority. It would not be able to allow you to introduce any new arguments.
I understand that, Your Honor, and 5 to 7 days is fine.
Okay. All right, well then, I'm gonna go ahead and grant the request for the division to file a response to the intervener's memorandum of points and authorities with deadline of August 25th. I don't have a calendar in front of me. What's a week after that? It takes us over the month, so I need help.
Your Honor?
Yeah.
Is it possible that I could learn a summary of what Ms. Yelly is?
Yeah, I'm sure she's going to provide that here.
Does someone have a calendar?
Yeah, so the week from the 25th is the 1st of September.
September 1st. And those are both weekdays, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the deadline for any reply that you want to file would be September 1st.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Schmidt, and thank you for so graciously working with the irregularities and unusual circumstances of this case.
We are flexible.
This
as
is her
the administrative
third time
process.
Through.
Okay.
With that, the division would like to call for its witness, Mr. William Duncan. Could Mr. William Duncan please be sworn?
Yes. Duncan, please raise your right hand, wherever you prefer. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony and evidence you provide today is the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, and this you do under penalty of perjury?
Yes.
And where do you want him, Ms. Schmidt? Up here or?
Doesn't matter.
Right here.
Okay, very good.
Good morning, Mr. Duncan.
Good morning.
Could you please state your full name, business address, employer, and employment address for the record?
Yes, my name is William Duncan. I work for the Division of Public Utilities. I'm manager of the Telecommunications and Water Section. Business address is 160 East 300 South, Salt Lake City.
In your role as manager of the Telecommunications and Water Section, have you participated on behalf of the division in this docket?
Yes, I have.
Could you please briefly describe your participation? Very briefly.
Yes, I've overseen and managed this case and worked with Mr. Long and others in the division since the case was filed.
Did you prepare and cause to be filed your direct testimony, which was filed on June
19th, 2015? Yes, I did.
And could you please state the name of that testimony and its exhibits?
It's the direct testimony of William Duncan. There are no exhibits.
Thank you. With that, the division would like to move for the admission of Mr. Duncan's direct testimony identified as DPU Exhibit 1.0.
Any objection, Mr. Pace?
No.
Any
no.
objection?
Oh, pardon me, 2.0.
2.0.
DPU Exhibit 2.0.
All right, so the version that I'm looking at, filed June 19th, is marked 1.0. Are we looking at the amended?
No. Mr. Long's testimony should be marked DPU Exhibit 1.0 and Mr. Duncan's 2.0.
Okay, thank you, sorry. Yes, thank you. I was incorrect.
And we move for the admission of 2.0.
Okay, that it is admitted and marked
Thank you. Mr. Duncan, do you have a summary of your testimony to give today?
Yes, I do.
Please proceed.
The purpose of my testimony is to present to the Public Service Commission of Utah, the PSC, the Division of Public Utilities, the DPU, policy and objectives in the rate-making process for water utilities. Mark Long will discuss the application of the DPU's policy and objectives in this case. Prior to 2008, the division had apparently used several various models in setting water company rates. While those models may have served well at the time, events of the past 7 to 8 years exposed some of the flaws in those models. Specifically, the nationwide recession that started in 2008 and significantly impacted the housing market had a tremendous impact on Utah water companies regulated by the PSC. Since many of the water companies regulated by the PSC and the DPU are built, owned, and managed by developers, the recession's impact rippled through the developers to the water companies and the citizens served by those companies. Several water companies regulated by the PSC were found to have significant financial problems due to three major and recurring problems. First, rates that were inadequate to cover costs. Second, a dependence on developer subsidies to cover costs. And third, little or no capital reserves. All of these elements contributed to some extent to the financial instability of the various companies and threatened the company's ability to provide reliable water service. Later, due to severe drought conditions across the western United States, the importance of water conservation increased as an important element in rate making. As the DPU was called upon to investigate and make recommendations to the PSC on these cases, the DPU researched, investigated, and analyzed various other rate models. Those models came from other states as well as federal agencies such as the EPA. As a result of this research, some elements of those models began to be included in DPU recommendations to the PSC. The DPU continues to refine its rate model to encompass all of the important elements that the DPU feels are necessary for small water companies regulated by the PSC. The DPU believes that the rates recommended in this case will provide financial stability for the water utility and promote water conservation, are just and reasonable, and are in the public interest.
Thank you.
When you refer to the proposed rates, you're talking about the amended?
Yes, I'm talking about the amended rates proposed by the DPU.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Duncan is available for cross-examination and questions from Your Honor now or whenever Your Honor would prefer.
Sure. I've read very carefully the division's testimony and the concerns that are raised. And let me just clarify that the division agrees that the service connection fee should be increased, correct?
Yes.
And can you just briefly address, or if you want, if Mr. Long, if you would prefer to address this, it's fine, but I would like you just to put on the record a brief discussion of what you consider full cost pricing and how you have determined that the rates proposed will achieve full cost pricing for this company.
I'll leave that one for Mr. Long.
Okay, that's fine. I also noted in the testimony the division's concern that it's been difficult to understand the books, that there appear to be intercompany transactions and lack of arm's length transactions. Has that concern been resolved? Mr. Pace testified earlier today that the books are separate.
Again, that's Mr. Long can testify to that.
Okay. You had also noted in the direct testimony that the water company is not using the correct depreciation rates pursuant to Utah Administrative Code 746-332-1. Does that remain a concern today?
It does. I think Mr. Long addresses that in some of his testimony.
All right. And that future expansion by the development company and the infrastructure needed to take water to new lots may not be funded by current taxpayers. Does that remain a concern today?
Yes, that remains a concern. I think Mr. Long addresses that.
Okay. And you had also raised a concern that the water company
water companies' desire to have a green belt, to have agriculture, are not relevant to the inquiry about what rates should be. Are you going to pursue that today?
Yes, I believe Mr. Long addresses that in his testimony.
Okay. All right, I think those are the basic areas that I wanted to discuss with the division. Then the commission also had a concern regarding the division's acquiescence to the idea that people who own water shares may have a different rate schedule than people who don't have shares, and wanted the division to weigh in on why shareholders qualify as a different class of ratepayers. Is that coming?
It's coming, awesome.
Okay, all right, thank you. Mr. Pace or Mr. Yelly, do you have any questions for Mr. Duncan?
No.
No.
Okay, go ahead, Ms. Schmidt.
The division would like to call as its next witness, Mr. Mark Long. Could he please be sworn?
Yes. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony and evidence you provide today is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and this you do under penalty of perjury?
Yes.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Long.
Good morning.
Could you please state for the record your full name, employer, title, and business address?
Yes, my name is Mark Long. I'm a utility analyst for the Division of Public Utilities. My address is 160 East, 300 South, Salt Lake City, Utah.
In connection with your employment at the division, have you participated in this docket?
Yes, I have.
Could you please briefly describe that participation?
When this case was first presented to the commission and referred to the division, I was assigned to be the point person on this case and have handled it ever since.
And so you have examined the books and records of the water company, including its expenses and revenues?
Yes, I have. I also went out and did an audit at the location at Mr. Brooks's office manager's residence and looked at all the books and records. All of those are made available to us.
Mr. Duncan referenced the division using models or other applications in its rate making process. Did you use a model to assist you in your evaluation and analysis?
Not necessarily a specific model, but ideas from probably several different models in this case.
Have you used those ideas in prior rate cases?
Yes, those have been done in the last at least two or three rate cases for the water companies.
Thank you. Mr. Long, are you familiar with the second corrected comments from the Division of Public Utilities filed March 3rd, 2015 in this docket?
Yes.
Do you adopt that as your testimony?
Second. Yes, I do.
The division will wait and ask to have things moved all at once.
Okay.
And Mr. Long, did you prepare and cause to be filed your direct testimony, previously marked as DPU Exhibit 1.0 with its accompanying exhibits in this docket?
Yes, I did.
Do you have any changes or corrections to that?
No, I don't.
Did you also prepare and cause to be filed DPU Exhibit Number 1.0SR with its accompanying exhibits?
Yes.
I believe previously we made a correction on Exhibit 3, changing 16,000 gallons to 1,600 gallons. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Absent that correction, do you have any other corrections that you would like to make to DPU Exhibit 1.0SR and its accompanying exhibits?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
With that, the division would like to move for the admission of the second corrected comments filed with the commission on March 3rd, 2015. The direct testimony of Mr. Mark Long, previously marked as DPU Exhibit 1.0 with its accompanying exhibits, and Mr. Long's surrebuttal testimony, previously marked as DPU 1.0SR with its exhibits, and as Exhibit 3 has been corrected here today.
And just for the record, the direct testimony is dated June 19th, and the surrebuttal testimony is dated August 7th.
Thank you very much.
Any objection, Mr. Pace?
No, ma'am.
No. Thank you. All right, those are accepted and entered as marked. Go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Long, do you have a summary to present today?
Yes, I do.
Please proceed.
First, let me start out by saying that Brooks Pace has the unenviable job of managing the culinary and irrigation water for nearly 400 customers through a single water system. Over the years, even though the rates did not cover the basic expenses, Mr. Pace subsidized the water company, and the division has had very few complaints. Dameron Water's current and proposed rates are much more complex than other water utilities the Commission regulates. The division has spent many hours, issued numerous data requests, sent and received dozens of emails, and had numerous conversations with Dameron to understand its proposed rates. To help me explain Dameron's complicated rate structure, I would like to use the analogy of an electric company, since most of us are more familiar with that. Let's call our electric company the ABC Company. ABC wants everybody's electric bills in the community to be about the same amount, regardless of how much electricity they use. To do this, ABC adjusts the rates based on the potential usage of each customer. Those using a lot of electricity are charged lower rates per unit used. Those using less electricity are charged higher rates. That way, users can use more electricity. Large users can use more electricity than smaller users, but still pay about the same amount at the end of the month. Although Dameron has never said that it wants all of its customers to pay the same amount, this is essentially how Dameron's current and proposed rate structure works. Dameron allows its larger two-tap customers to use more water at lower rates than its smaller one-tap customers. The division's recommended rate structure does away with the tap system altogether and charges all customers the same rate. Those customers who use more water than other customers are charged more in their monthly bill. If you use more, you pay more. It's that simple. To continue with this example, in the name of conservation, ABC offers a conservation program that customers can choose to join if they want. Not too many people want to conserve, so less than 4% of the electric companies opted in, which is a good thing for ABC that not many of the customers opted in because the conservation rates do not even cover its fixed costs, and ABC would eventually go bankrupt. That aside, ABC charges its conservation customers a set price that includes, for example, 12 units of electricity. ABC charges its conservation customers the same amount whether they use one unit or 12 units. Realizing this, these conservation customers keep close track of their usage and splurge on their use at the end of the month because they figure they may as well use all 12 units because, after all, they've already paid for them. The only conservation part of ABC's conservation rate applies when its conservation customers use more than their 12 units, then their rates rise steeply. The above scenario is precisely how Dameron's conservation efforts work. Dameron's conservation is largely voluntary and sets a set amount regardless of the amount of water used. Dameron personnel indicated that it's common for its water users to keep close track of their water usage and call the office to confirm how much they have left at the end of the for their monthly allotment so they can use it before the end of the month so they don't lose it. The division's recommended conservation structure is not voluntary, since it is built into the entire rate structure and customers only pay for the water they use. Still continuing with our example, ABC decides that rather than promoting conservation, it wants to be the most well-lit community in the valley. ABC promises its customers that if they keep the valley well-lit by keeping all their lights on and use as much electricity as they want, ABC will sell them the necessary bulk electricity at its cost. ABC has also had to overbuild its system to handle the extra demand of the high users on its generators and plant. ABC also admits that without the smaller users paying the higher rates, it cannot support its bulk electrical sales. This bulk rate angered some of the potentially larger users spoken of earlier, because now the bulk rate they are not, because with the bulk rate they are not getting as good a deal as some of the potentially smaller users. So ABC allows them to switch their rate designation if it makes their bills smaller. This is how Dameron's irrigation rate works. Dameron's irrigation must be subsidized either by the culinary users or Mr. Pace. Mr. Pace has repeatedly stated that he wants to enhance the beauty of the valley by providing plentiful and cheap water to keep the valley green, especially by the freeway. The division's recommended irrigation rate is set to recover the actual cost of irrigation based on the best information that is available, and therefore does not have to rely on subsidies to support it. One last thing to remember, to consider. ABC believes that low rates and a well-lit valley will attract new customers who will buy land and have a home built in ABC's service area. In order to keep the rates artificially low, ABC's owner must subsidize a company during times of need, which is constant because its conservation and irrigation rates do not cover costs and its practice of cutting special deals for select users. Since its inception, ABC has never supported itself without help. Subsidies have kept rates artificially low and provided a false sense of security. With plentiful subsidies in the past, ABC has never established any savings or sought financial security because someone is always there to bail it out until there isn't. Dameron has always relied on subsidies from Mr. Pace. It has never been self-supporting, and for this reason, its rates have always been artificially low. Continued subsidies from Mr. Pace or his successors is not guaranteed. On the other hand, Dameron customers' need for reliable and operable water system is guaranteed. It is not sound financial or regulatory policy to continue to allow Dameron to depend on subsidies and charge rates that clearly do not cover the full cost of service. Much has been said in this hearing about how much higher the division's recommended rates are than the rates recommended by Dameron. Although they are structured differently, the actual amounts are much the same. In fact, using Dameron's one-tap tier, the division's recommended rates in total billing amount is actually 20% lower in the examples that we used than the rates proposed by Dameron. And you can take a look at that if you would. It's found in Exhibit 4 SR and 5 SR. And in this, we're going to get the exhibits. In Exhibit 4 SR, the division went through and selected some typical water usage amounts. And so, for example, in the top columns, you'll see 17,500 gallons with zero irrigation shares.
That's gallons per what?
Per month.
Per month? Okay.
Yes. And then it went through and selected some other gallons. Some of these are from actual customer bills. I think, for example, the 63 gallons with two water shares is actually from his Yoli's bill this year. Anyway, it went through and it came up with the total monthly billing amount based on the current rates, the rates requested by Dameron, the rates originally recommended by the division, and the amended rates recommended by the division. And this shows a comparison of where they fall into the scope of things. To make that a little bit simpler to understand, I provided Exhibit 5 SR, which is six different graphs that actually show the difference in the monthly bills based on the proposed the current and the recommended rates. As you can see here, the division rates in green, or if yours is not in color, the last two columns of every graph are very similar to, the net effect is very similar to the amounts proposed by Dameron.
Which are what color?
Well, the ones proposed by Dameron are the blue, and the ones that are currently in effect by Dameron are the purple. And one thing the division would like to point out, in the very first graph of 17,500 gallons, the division has drawn a line there called fixed cost. And its concern is if you look at the conservation rate, the dark blue there for 3675, it's not covering the costs of the system. And that's why if every single customer were to opt into the conservation rate, the system would be losing money. It wouldn't even be able to cover its fixed costs. So it wouldn't be able to cover all the salaries and taxes and other items. And that's the big concern about allowing Dameron's, what they say is their conservation rate, to continue as such. And if you were to look at all of these and add them all together, the division's rates are actually 20% lower if you're comparing those to Dameron's one-tap system, which rather seems rather arbitrary whether they, what tap system they seem to put you in, actually. Continue, in this docket, the division is recommending rates that are just and reasonable and in the public interest. The division's proposed rates are sufficient to give Dameron the chance to make it self-sustaining while providing a reliable, safe water supply. The division's rates do not discriminate against any rate class, are easy to understand and follow, and are set at the lowest cost possible. In conclusion, the division recommends the following. Number one, the rates and rate structure proposed by Dameron Valley be rejected because they will not result in just and reasonable rates and are not in the public interest. Number two, the amended rates and fees set forth proposed by the division and outlined in Exhibit 2SR of my surrebuttal testimony be approved as being just and reasonable and in the public interest. That the service connection fee be increased from $1,500 to $2,000, and that Dameron Water be allowed to expand its service area as shown in Exhibit 9 of my direct testimony. The division believes that its recommended rates are just and reasonable and in the public interest. Therefore, the division recommends the commission approve these new rates, fees, and expansion of the service area.
Mr. Long, by these new rates, do you mean the division's revised?
Yes, the division's revised rate, amended rates that are in Exhibit 2SR of the surrebuttal testimony.
Mr. Long, were you here when Mr. Pace addressed the reserve fund?
Yes, I was.
I believe that he said that the reserve fund could be used to cover a revenue shortfall, for example, if rates did not cover the costs 1 year. Could you please tell us more about the capital reserve account?
Yes, if you refer to my direct testimony under, I believe it's Exhibit 2,
Exhibit
2 under my direct testimony.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Okay, got it.
And this talks about the capital reserve accounting requirements. It's put in here so that this can be added verbatim to the tariff. And it clearly goes through and talks about how much the capital reserve account should be, what fees should go into it, how they shall be deposited, it should be deposited within 30 days of receiving them. This should be made for capital replacements and improvements only. If if Mr. Pace is finding that he's not able to pay the standard bills from the operation and maintenance of the water company, then he probably should come in and get a new rate case. This is merely to reserve the depreciation expense to be used for capital replacement and improvements only.
As an example, could you give us an example of a capital improvement or replacement?
Typically, those are high-cost items with long service lives. Things like distribution pipe, main lines, storage reservoirs, wells, surface water intakes, pumps, things of that nature.
Thank you. Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
No, I just wish to emphasize that the division is trying to set the rates that will cover the cost of the water system and not make the water system dependent on subsidies. Mr. Duncan spoke about that as well, and with that I'd like to conclude my testimony.
Thank you. Mr. Long is now available for cross-examination questions and questions from Your Honor.
Okay. So I think we're going to be speaking probably quite a bit through the remainder of this proceeding about the irrigation shares, what those mean and how they should be priced. And the division's amended recommended rates do acknowledge and respect those shares by having quite a low price that attaches to each 1,000 gallons used by a person who has a share after paying for the first 12,000 gallons at the regular rate.
24.
I'm looking at the division's suggested rates, right? So
yes.
The division has a base rate of $37.90, which is just basically for access and infrastructure and so on. It includes no gallons of water.
That's correct.
And then for the first 12,000 gallons, the division recommends 30 cents per 1,000 gallons.
That's correct.
Whatever that multiplies out to. But after using 12,000 gallons, then anyone who has irrigation shares starts paying 45 cents per 1,000 gallons.
That's correct.
Okay. Whereas somebody who does not have an irrigation share starts paying 60 cents per 1,000 gallons and then starts going up from there.
That's correct.
Okay.
And likewise with the irrigation, once they've used up their irrigation allotment, then they go right into tier two and
right.
continue through that as
right.
well.
I understand.
Okay.
So, but the commission's concern, and I'm sure Ms. Yelly, that you have much you want to say on this issue as well, is why owning an irrigation share should entitle you to lower rates than non-shareholders. Does the division have any thoughts on that?
Initially, when the irrigation rate was approved and recommended by the commission, it applied to those people that purchase an irrigation share.
Mm-hmm.
Either they purchase it or it was donated to them by actually Mr. Pace or Dameron Corporation. The money was actually paid to Mr. Pace or Dameron Corporation, never to the water company, which has been troublesome to the division, but since it was enacted and approved by the commission and the division is going along with recommending that the irrigation rate remain and applied similar to how it's always been. It's really difficult to come up with separate and distinct rates between the irrigation and the culinary because it's all one system. If it was a separate system and they had an irrigation ditch, then we probably wouldn't even be regulating that, and they could do what they wanted, it would be unregulated. But we're trying to do the best with what we have and considering it's all through one system.
So the division's recommendation for the relatively low cost irrigation water is really just an attempt to play nice and respect the tradition and what's been going on in this area over time?
That's certainly part of it. the customers did pay something for it at the time, or a value was assigned to that when it was donated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another reason.
Okay.
One thing the division has done is it's added an amount to the cost per 1,000 gallons that will help cover the additional wear and tear on the equipment caused by the irrigation and also the overbuilding of the system that had to be done to accommodate the irrigation customers.
Mm-hmm.
But there is...
But if the division does not feel, and this is something that you might well address in your reply or your response brief that you submit, the division doesn't feel that the commission is legally bound to give shareholders a better rate than non-shareholders?
I don't believe they are. I think the division or the commission could recommend that the irrigation is discontinued and everybody using water goes through the exact same tier rate.
So does the division see any legal distinction between a shareholder and a non-shareholder that would require or justify a lower rate?
The division would be happy to address that question in its reply.
Okay, because that I think is of high concern to the commission.
Okay.
Mr. Long, do you want to comment on any of the other concerns that were raised in your direct testimony that's on file? I think you've discussed full cost pricing and the subsidization, excuse me. Do you want to comment on the books? Has that, of the various companies, has that concern been resolved? Are you asking the commission for a remedy?
No, I think that's been pretty much resolved. It was mainly referring to Mr. Pace putting loans and expenses perhaps into the water company that really belonged to the developer. And I think those have been worked out, and as well as the depreciation rates. He knows which rates to use now, and
okay.
Unfortunately that's a really common thing that happens in most of the water rates, and so he may want to notify his accountant of that as well so that he'll make sure and use the rates approved by the commission and not necessarily the depreciation rates used for taxes or other.
Okay, and is the division now satisfied that Mr. Pace has the knowledge and the willingness to establish and fund a capital reserve account?
He has the knowledge and hopefully the willingness.
Okay, well maybe we can get him to talk about that. Do you want to comment at all about motivation, the motivation to encourage agriculture and to keep a green belt by the freeway and so on? In your direct testimony, you had stated that that's not the purview of a utility, that such are not allowable expenses.
That's right. They talk a lot about, you know, we want to keep the valley green and beautiful, which is nice, but that's really not what the rates for the water company should be set to encourage to do. Those that want to have the greenery should pay for those. And whether that's, you know, paying the standard culinary rates or whatever the commission decides, but you know, that really isn't anything that has a bearing on the rates and making it a reliable and safe and self-sustaining water company.
Okay, I think that's all the questions I have for you now. Mr. Pace, do you have any questions for Mr. Long?
I absolutely do.
Okay.
And some are statements and not questions, so I'll try and be as pedantic as I possibly can, but as Mr. Duncan and Mr. Long pointed out, the nationwide recession of the last 8 years has been very tough on developers, and it slowed us down, but we had no problems. We were very capable of doing a $280,000 project building the West Side transmission line. I subsidized the water company $50,000 each year since we built that line in order to make those payments with the rate increase, and taking that $50,000 out of the water company now, that's like the water company's now flush even without a rate increase, and with the rate increase I'm proposing,
we're just not in the category. You can't lump us in with everybody that had problems. New developers absolutely had problems. They were strung out, they were in debt up to their neck, and they had problems. We are a 39-year-old company. I've been doing this particular business for 50 years in Las Vegas and primarily in St. George, and we're very well capable of taking care of our problems, even through the 8 years of not being able to subdivide or hardly sell any lots.
Your Honor, would this sort of statement be more appropriate for Mr. Pace to make at the end of the proceeding, and would it be appropriate for him to ask questions only at this point?
It would. I thought this was the end. No, I have every expectation that we're going to be together for most of the day, particularly when we start talking about shareholder interests. So if you have questions for Mr. Long about his recommendation.
Well, I would just question lumping me into the category of many of my friends and fellow developers who did go bankrupt or have very severe problems and lost half of their assets, et cetera, et cetera. I would question your lumping us in that category. You refer to our rate structure as complicated. It's been evolving for 39 years. Nobody's confused about it in Dameron Valley. If you're in tier one, you know, one and a half tapping, you know exactly what it means. Ms. Yelly is a little confused and thinks she's been billing wrong. I think she'll find that she's been billing correctly because the computer does the computation.
Yeah, I'd like to comment on that.
Just a moment, because
I thought it was a question.
I don't want to get into a billing dispute here. So
if there's
an issue, you can file a complaint with the division, and we'll deal with it separately. But we're not going to get into that today.
But again, I question why they find it so complicated. It is unique, but it's not complicated to any of us.
Could Mr. Long respond to these questions?
Yes. Essentially, the question, we have two questions, I think, so far. One is, why would you consider this developer to be similarly situated to others who have been heavily impacted by the recession and the housing market? And then what's the next thing we went to?
The complicated rate structure. I can summarize this in a real question.
Okay.
Why is the commission, or the division, and the commission possibly also, so determined to have a one-size-fits-all? We are a very unique community. Name me a community that has lots from 3/4 acre to 17 acre, 105 acre lots, you know, hills, flatland, part of the subdivision is on solid rock. I mean, there's very good reasons why this thing evolved the way it did, and it's very logical to those of us that lived it. And I would also look at Bill Duncan and Patricia Schmidt and say, you have been a part of this thing for the last two rate hearings. You were definitely 04, and possibly Mr. Duncan, you were even there in the 87 when we did the irrigation. No? But in any case, you've known of this rate structure. I don't know how complicated you think it is. You worked through it. The conservation rate added another tier, so to speak. But I would ask, why such a determination in this? You know, we are a capitalistic, democratic company where uniqueness is important. And I realize the Public Service Commission would like to standardize, have companies be in the black, absolutely. But there's many ways of doing that, not just one deal.
Okay,
why the one size fit all so important?
Go ahead.
Well, and the division believes that this is tailored specifically to Dameron Valley. We went through every single expense and looked at all your billings, and we're trying to recommend something that will cover the costs and not require Dameron Valley to continue to have subsidizations. You and I have talked about this in length. God forbid, what if something happened to you tomorrow? Would your successor still be willing or able to subsidize the water company? Right now it has $200 in the bank, and it couldn't make its payroll next month.
It's just not true. We don't have $200 in the bank right now. I think we probably have something like $16,000 or $18,000 in the bank. It just happened at the end of the year. Maybe that the account was down $200, and you're making a big deal of it. But it's really, we're a very flush group of companies.
And just take Dameron Corporation and Dameron Water. They are incredibly valuable companies, and they can sustain themselves.
May I object to this line of questions?
Mr. Pace, just a moment, please. Go ahead, Mrs. Mishman.
I object so far, and as Mr. Pace is using this as an opportunity for rebuttal rather than an opportunity to question the division's witnesses.
Sustain.
All right.
Do you have any other questions?
I'm seeing if I can turn one of these things into a question. I think they're probably all going to be closing statements.
Mr. Long, do you want to comment on the question about whether the division is seeking a one-size-fits-all standard rate? You've mentioned that you feel like this is customized to Dameron Valley.
Well, we believe it is customized, the recommended rates. The rate structure, on the other hand, is something that we've found has been successful and useful for other water companies, and we're trying to adapt this to fit Dameron Water.
When you say rate structure, you mean the division's proposed rate structure?
Yes, I'm sorry, yes, it's amended rate structure. One thing that Mr. Pace has questioned earlier is about the complicated rate structure and the different tapping systems, and I believe even Your Honor had some questions about that. It was very frustrating for the division in trying to understand this rate. In fact, I can't count the number of phone calls that were placed to Dameron's water office and the different rates that we just trying to understand their rates. We were told at least three separate times that yes, the rates, the way you understand them, are correct. And then 2 days later, they would come back and say, oh no, those aren't correct. And it's just been, it's been really frustrating for the division, and I can just imagine customers trying to decide, well, what tap system are we on? As we saw earlier, it's not necessarily tied to the size of the lot. It's tied to the size of the lot initially, but then the new lots are a different tap system. Then, if you want to, if you think you can save some money, then you can go from the two tap to the one tap. It's outlived its usefulness, if there ever was a usefulness to it.
Any other questions, Mr. Pace?
How does the division feel a person that's currently paying $18 a month and getting 12,000 gallons of water is going to feel now paying $41.50 for the 12,000 gallons of water?
Objection calls for speculation.
Does. And I'll sustain your objection unless Mr. Long wants to comment.
I don't know how they would feel, but the reason that rate is set that way is to cover the fixed expenses. If nobody uses any water at all, the rates will cover the fixed expenses.
Mr. Pace, any other questions?
I'll save it all for something, I suppose.
Okay. Ms. Yelly, any questions?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. I have one redirect question, if I may.
Please.
Mr. Long, are you familiar with the rate-making principle of gradualism?
Yes.
Is the division's continuation of some sort of irrigation rate consistent with that rate-making principle?
I believe it is. We've tried to continue that, but to make sure that it's at least covering the costs associated with that.
And so the principle of gradualism, to put it very simply, for me in particular, is that you move towards things. Is that correct? Rather than taking a huge step all at once.
That's correct.
Thank you. That's all my redirect questions.
Okay. Ms. Yelly?
No further questions.
Mr. Pace?
I would comment on what Ms. Schmidt just brought up. What is gradualism about going to our rate structure to this? This is about as big a leap away from our rate structure of 39 years as there could possibly be. You pay $38 and you don't get a drop of water. And then you start buying water at 30 cents and so forth. It's more complicated. People are going to react very, very negatively to this.
Do you want to respond?
I will let the record speak for itself. I understand that the only person who has sought to intervene is Ms. Jelly, and she's been granted intervention. I do not know how many people will speak at the public witness hearing tomorrow, and I believe that will speak for itself.
All right, Ms. Jelly, it's your turn. And you're going to testify as well as you're going to be proffering sort of your own testimony, basically.
Yes, Your Honor.
So let's go ahead and swear anyway. Would you stand, please?
Yes.
Do you solemnly swear that the testimony and evidence you provide today is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and this you do under penalty of perjury?
I do. The reason that I, well, first of all, my name is Barbara Yelly, H-J-E-L-L-E, and I live in the Dameron Valley Meadows subdivision on lot 34. That lot was purchased by my husband and I in 1990, and when we purchased the lot, we paid $3,000 for a water right. This is not a water share. This is a water right, bona fide, recorded water right with the state of Utah engineer. And the Meadows subdivision is a 5-acre hobby farm subdivision. I do have two exhibits related to that that I would offer right now. One is the warranty deed for our lot showing that a water right 81-2176, 1 acre foot portion of that water right was conveyed with title to the lot. Exhibit 2 is a printout from the state engineer's website regarding that same water right. You would find any water right would allow you to have a similar printout. This is part and parcel with every other water right that exists in the state of Utah. I do commend the Division of Public Utilities for its detailed analysis and consideration of the issues raised by me and other customers. I also think that Mr. Pace has raised some important points. I'm not here really to comment on the proper testimony on the details of the numbers, so much as I am interested in protecting a valuable property right that I have acquired, my husband and I have acquired by purchase. And I do have and would like to submit a legal memorandum that was emailed out earlier. And the original, I guess, plus two need to go to the commission. Can I submit those in this hearing or do I need to file them separately?
I think the commission has what it needs. Do the parties have the memorandum?
The division has the memorandum.
Mr. Pace, do you have the memorandum?
I don't know. I'll take one.
Yeah, pass those down then. I do have extra copies if you don't need the paper filing that I thought I needed. And the purpose of this memo is really to try to articulate this point that there may have been many ways that Dameron Valley Water Company could have addressed its desire to have green belt and irrigation water, but the way that was selected is to deed water rights. And as my memo discusses, I believe that a principle of law would be that those who acquired those water rights were entitled to rely upon the body of law specifically applicable to water rights. Because I did understand that body of law, as it turns out, and I was concerned about forfeiture. If you pay for this water right and you don't use it, you have lost the value of what you have bought. Under Utah water law, as outlined in the legal memo, you are required to beneficially use a water right, and if you do not put it to full beneficial use, you will lose that portion of the water that you don't use. So this is fundamental law of the state of Utah. So I will refer to my husband and I as me.
Pardon me.
Yes.
This is sort of an awkward question, but I feel I must ask it. Under the commission's rules, an officer or director of a company or an attorney may represent others other than themselves. Are you an attorney?
Yes, but I'm representing myself.
But you are an attorney?
Yes, I am. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Okay, so anyway, we specifically intended to protect that water right, and in the course of doing that, we've developed a small pasture and have very carefully monitored our usage. Unfortunately, we have never been able to use our entire water right because of the tiered rate structure that imposes a conservation rate before you are able to utilize your full acre foot of water. And this is one of the concerns that I wanted to bring to the attention of the commission. You need the water in the hot summer months, and you can't use it in the entire 8-month period that you're allocated at 40,000 gallons a month, because in the early spring, the ground is frozen, the plants are dormant, and your water system would likely freeze if you try to operate it improperly. I would like to proffer a report of the State of Utah Agricultural Extension Service, primarily for a table on page 6, which shows the monthly crop evapotranspiration for the Vail Powerhouse, which is close to Dameron Valley. And this is table 3 on page 6. That you can see readily that your real usage occurs starting in May and then is high in June, July. Really, our high month is often August, although that doesn't necessarily reflect here. So if you can't use your water during the hot summer months, you are basically deprived of its use, and this is one of my concerns about the 40,000 gallon cap in each month. That is essentially forcing users or water right holders into a condition of forfeiture. We also did acquire an additional acre foot of water, certificated water, in 2011. And I see some value in the way the Division of Public Utilities has organized the tiers, in that the next tier after irrigation, you can use your irrigation water, and then you don't have a huge penalty rate immediately, which would make it easier to manage a little bit to not go over with your irrigation rate or be penalized heavily if you exceeded your irrigation allotment. But 40,000 gallons a month simply will not allow you to use your full acre foot. I do not dispute the obligation of users in Dameron Valley to pay a fair share of costs and not be subsidized, and I'm by the users I'm referring to irrigation users. Whatever that number is, I am not here to submit that 45 cents or 32 cents or any other number is the proper number, other than that I think the principle elucidated by the DPU is reasonable, but the history articulated by Mr. Pace is reflected in these water rights. And these water rights do place those irrigation users in a unique position. I would like to proffer an exhibit I did not email out.
May we stop it?
Yes.
At this point and discuss the exhibits that have been put forth so far, just so I can keep track of things a little better?
So you've pre-marked these as ABC, so I think we'll just go ahead and go with that.
I did?
At least the one I have has been marked. I don't know if you did it or if the division did it.
They may have marked it.
I
labeled them exhibit 1, 2, 3, and the ones I just handed out, I put yelly on it so that it would be clearer. But whatever you would like, Your Honor, I can understand it. I can mark them.
That's a better thing. All right, so we have a warranty deed dated August 17th, 1990. And this is the warranty deed by which the intervenor acquired the lot on which you live now, correct?
That's right.
And with it came the right to 1 acre foot of water for irrigation purposes. It doesn't say per year, but is that your understanding, 1 acre foot per year?
Yes, if you look at the water right printout, that might elucidate the right that goes with that a little more clearly.
Okay, so does the division or does the applicant have any objections to this exhibit?
No, Your Honor.
The division has some concerns it would like noted on the record.
Please, go ahead.
The division would like the record to note that the copies provided are not certified. However, the division has no objection to their entry into evidence under that criteria.
Okay. And the division has no reason, I'm assuming, to dispute that the contents of the warranty deed are accurate and that this is what the Ellie's purchased.
Correct. The division has no reason to dispute the truthfulness of the exhibits presented.
Okay, so this will be marked as intervenor's exhibit one.
And I would certainly testify that this is a true and accurate copy of our warranty deed, leaving aside the unofficial copy stamp, the warranty deed that we received from our predecessors in interest to the water right, and this water certificate that we received from the water company.
And the second page behind that is another warranty deed, which is not for a lot or another piece of property, but is only for an additional water right, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. What happened, I just introduced this to clarify that our predecessors in interest specifically purchased a water right as a water right.
Okay. So this is the same water right that was transferred to you under the addition, under the warranty deed we just looked at?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so this was granted to your, to the sellers of the property to you.
If I may make one more comment, mm-hmm. I believe that the recognition of the usefulness or of what the warranty deeds represent in terms of water rights and usage is beyond the scope of the commission's jurisdiction. I believe that that would properly be found in district court. However, the division understands the purpose for which these are offered.
Thank you for that comment. I do think we're gonna get into that topic as we move along. So do you, both of these warranty deeds then, if there's no objection, will be included in the intervenor's exhibit one. Everybody okay with that?
The division is fine.
Okay, the next page that we have then is an irrigation share certificate dated May 5th, 2011. Do you want to explain to us what this is?
This is a subsequently purchased irrigation share certificate in the form that apparently is now issued by the water company, purchased from another user in Dameron Valley. That cost us $4,000.
Okay. Any objection to this?
Again, the division would just note that it's not a certified copy, but has no objection to its entry as an exhibit and has no reason to doubt its veracity.
Thank you. Mr. Pace, any objection to this?
No.
Can I just ask you a couple of questions? Would you help me to understand what the difference is between the share that you purchased here and the water right that you got under the warranty deed?
Your Honor, if I could just proffer my one more exhibit that's new, that hasn't been seen yet, I think I can elucidate some, if not all, of that question.
Okay, would you let Ms. Schmidt and Mr.
Yes.
Pace look at that, please?
And that's the original. I don't know if it's got the green. I don't know if that needs to go to the judge. These are the copies. Let's see. I hope there's enough here.
You're
Schmidt, do you have any objections to this additional exhibit?
The division does not. The division notes that there could possibly be questions regarding the exhibit's foundation, but makes no mention of those concerns and waives those concerns.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Pace, any objection to this exhibit?
No, ma'am.
The purpose, Your Honor, that I wanted to add this background information is that, and Mr. Pace can elaborate beyond my knowledge base, but fundamentally, water rights were transferred, I believe, in a similar fashion. It is the way we received ours, via a bona fide Utah State Engineer recognized water right. And then later, some of these water rights were transferred back to whether Dameron Valley Water Works or the developer, I am not sure, but fundamentally were transferred back to Dameron and are now held on the books of the company as a certificate. But my point of argument is that these rights that were once water rights, those rights and obligations should follow because of the nature of the transaction by which they were transferred back to the water company for no consideration. So the people who paid for those water rights paid for this irrigation share as well. And it was represented to be the equivalent of the same 1 acre foot as if it were a water right. So I wanted to make sure that was on the record.
Okay. Now hold off marking this for a moment. The next exhibit in the packet that you provided just ahead of hearing is the printout, as you mentioned, from the Division of Water Rights from the state of Utah.
Yes.
Any objection?
Pardon me. Again, the division notes that it's not a certified copy, but makes no objection.
Okay, Mr. Pace?
No objection.
Thank you. This is marked then as intervener exhibit 2. It looks like it's about 4 pages long. Then the next exhibit that you've provided ahead of time is a document from Utah State University titled Sprinklers, Crop Water Use, and Irrigation Time, Washington County. What's the purpose of this?
This is to provide some data in reflecting the challenges of being able to protect your water right from forfeiture if you are limited to an equal 40,000 gallon per month allocation over an 8 month period, rendering it impossible to protect your water right from forfeiture.
Where does it discuss forfeiture?
It does not. The sole purpose for introducing this exhibit is page 6, table 3. That reflects the evapotranspiration demands of plants in the Veo area, which is just 2 miles about from Dameron Valley, and shows that there is really a variation in demand for water such that you need your water in June, July, August, and you can't really use it in March and April, which are two of the months that you would have to use 40,000 gallons you can't use.
Okay.
So it's merely to get some factual
any
evidence.
Objection?
The division would just like to note that the report is dated 2002, but has no objection.
Okay. Mr. Pace, any objection?
Well, Ms. Schmidt earlier indicated this was in the purview of this commission, and so I'm not sure why we're continuing to discuss it, but I have no objection to entering.
All right, this is marked then as intervener exhibit 3. The next exhibit that you have provided ahead of time is Mr. Pace's direct testimony of March. I believe that's already in the record, correct?
I was not sure procedurally, Your Honor, how you had to deal with things that were already in the record.
It hasn't been admitted as an exhibit in this proceeding. Any objection if we go ahead and do that?
No objection.
No objection.
All right, we'll go ahead and do that as the intervenors exhibit four. And then finally, your water bills.
Yes, proposed exhibit five shows the variation in usage of water. Once again, submitted for the factual background to show that it is impossible to use an acre foot of water in an 8-month period with, given the temperatures and evapotranspiration losses and the dormancy and the demand for water variability. So that, in essence, by limiting the amount of water that you can have with a water right, you are placed in jeopardy of forfeiture.
Any objection?
The division would just like to note for the record that these are not certified copies, but again, has no reason to doubt the veracity of the copies.
Mr. Pace, any objection?
Any objection to the document?
Correct.
No.
Okay. Then this is marked as intervener exhibit five, and we'll mark the exhibit that was brought today, which is the letters from Dameron Valley Water Works to its customers, encouraging them to convert deeded use rights to certificated rights as intervener exhibit six.
And Your Honor, in answer to your earlier question, again, Mr. Pace could probably elucidate this. I believe there may have been other certificates sold that never had a prior water right associated with them, but I do not know.
Okay. Well, I think really what I need help with here is understanding your argument that your having purchased a right to use a certain amount of water equates to your right to have some sort of a guaranteed or restricted, that it restricts the commission in setting a rate. That's what I need help with.
Okay, and did I submit my legal memo already? I did, didn't I?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. Most of that is set forth in the legal memo, and I wasn't sure how you wanted to address legal argument versus factual testimony, but I think this is an issue of law that needs to be addressed. Factually speaking, I think that the things that Mr. Pace desires to do vis-a-vis Greenbelt and the like are, my argument in essence supports his ability to do that because of the way and nature in which this water was deeded. And whether subsequently transferred back or not, still with the same rights. I don't know how the Utah Public Service Commission could ignore the law applicable to these water rights and say it doesn't matter. These are property rights, they've been bought and paid for, they're documented and recorded, and they have the body of bundle of rights that goes along with the water rights. That's my argument, that I believe the commission should take that into account. I appreciate that the DPU, whether they acknowledge it as a matter of water right or not, at least they adjusted the tier rate to obviate the damage to water rights holders of potentially losing all of that property right. But that's my fundamental argument. There are laws on the books for the Public Service Commission, there are laws on the books pertaining to water rights, and somehow or other, it seems to me, they all must be respected, and people are entitled to rely on that law.
Do you want your memorandum marked as an exhibit?
I don't know how the Public Service Commission takes legal argument. In all honesty, I'm not an expert, and I don't do Public Service Commission work, so. I would like the legal argument to be fully considered.
Well, as Ms. Schmidt has pointed out, this case has proceeded in an unusual manner. So, at the risk of sounding unprofessional, we're sort of making it up as we go along. Ms. Schmidt, you seem to be nodding when I suggested marking this as an exhibit. Is that what the division would prefer?
I think that would help clarify the record.
All right.
Mr. Pace, any objection to this memorandum coming into the record as intervenors exhibit seven?
No, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. So I am arguing thus that a conservation rate over and above paying a fair share to an attempt to diminish the use of a water right is contrary to Utah law, and that the DPU, the division, has properly inserted the water right tier after paying fixed costs and after paying an appropriate residential level of use. At that point, you should be allowed to have your irrigation water delivered at an irrigation water rate, whatever that fair rate may be. And I would note that Mr. Pace's testimony that I submitted as an exhibit states that there is sufficient capacity in the system to deliver all the water necessary for build out. There are 380 connections to the system now. There would be 1,110 later. It seems that there is no problem with existing capacity already paid for by current users to have more than 40,000 gallons a month delivered and allow them to protect their water rights. And I believe Mr. Long has also testified that there's ample water in the system. And that, I believe, supports raising that cap. I can understand having to have some monthly cap. The question becomes, what should it be, and should it be such that it requires a forfeiture of a water right? I believe there is an argument under Utah water law that these water rights have a completely separate role in the system, and I've articulated that briefly in my legal memo. And I believe that, you know, we have a 5/8-inch meter on our lot. The line going to our lot is 6 inches, which is smaller than the new requirements of 8 inches for fire flow. And the developer requires that you constrain your pipe past the meter for at least 3 feet to, I don't know, 3/4 or 1 inch. All of these things limit flow and protect the company, I believe, to some extent from undue overuse of, you know, you can only use your irrigation water at a certain instantaneous rate. It's the monthly cap that I believe is problematical. Listening to Mr. Pace, I believe that honoring these water rights is a mechanism by which the Public Service Commission can address the residential water use fairly and also address the desire of the developer to have those water rights irrigate the landscape in accordance with Utah water law. And those of us who relied upon that law in developing our pastures and our other water use facilities, knowing we had the right to it, expecting that it would be honored, would not lose that benefit by an adverse ruling of the Public Service Commission. Thank you.
So what you are asking for today is that someone who owns a deeded water right or a share should be able to use the total amount that's owned under whatever irrigation rate is set. Is that what you're asking for?
Yes.
Okay. And that right now 40,000 gallons per year?
Per month.
Does not allow you to use your full, even a full acre foot per year at the irrigation rate.
That's correct.
And therefore, you're equating the higher charge for what remains of the acre foot after the 40,000 gallons per month. You're equating the increased charge to a forfeiture.
I'm equating it to an unreasonable burden on the use of a water right contrary to Utah Code 73-1-9, which I believe should be referenced to govern the charges for delivery of a water right through a shared system.
So 73-1-9, as you've quoted it, talks about expenses being reasonable. Mm-hmm. And your argument is that it is unreasonable to have any portion of a water right subject to a rate higher than what's approved for the irrigation rate.
I believe the testimony establishes that the additional tiers are designed to discourage the use of water and enhance conservation. So that in and of itself is inconsistent with the nature and scope of a water right under Utah state law. So while it is fair to charge irrigation users under these water rights and shares certificates such that they are not being subsidized by the other users in the system, anything over and above that for the purposes of discouraging the use of the water, a conservation rate applied to irrigation water is contrary to the entire intent and body of Utah water law under Title 73.
So it's your contention that Title 73, the intent of Title 73 is to be anti-conservation?
I believe that under Title 73, you must use your water wisely. I don't think you're allowed to waste it, but you must use it. So if you don't use it, you lose it. I mean, that's just the state of the law.
Is the intent not to say that you can use it or you can not use it, and the statute is without a preference?
I think this, I don't believe the law. My position is that under particularly the 73-1-9, but the entire body of Utah water law should be respected by the Public Service Commission, and a conservation burden should not be placed on delivery of a certificated water right.
Okay. So I need you to reconcile that against the code section here, and Division, you might have to help me find it, that states, that charges the commission with setting rates that discourage waste. I believe that's what it says. Are you finding it, Ms. Schmidt?
I am not. Can I have just one moment?
You may.
Could I possibly intervene and add some clarity to this discussion?
In a minute.
Are you looking at 54-4-4?
I might be. Just a minute.
What
lovely.
Time will be lunch break?
Would you like to take lunch now?
That would be lovely.
Okay. How long do you want for lunch?
An hour?
Till 1 o'clock, please.
I would sure appreciate the shortest possible time. I do have to drive home tonight.
Let's make it till 12:45. And we'll go off the record until then. Thank you.
Thank you.
I guess Mr. Barnum is calling in.